Frel Chempur, today's Daf and Kedushin is Yud Gimel. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is on the Zech and Ishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We're on the bottom of Yud Beis. We're starting with this morning with the words Hu Gavra. Generally speaking, Kedushin requires Das. Not generally. It does. Kedushin requires Das. If a man wants to be Mekadosh a woman, so he gives her the Kets of Kedushin, he says, Sir, I am Mekadosh Aslibata Bazu. I'm going to be Mekadosh with this ring, Kedas Moshe V'Yisrael. And what does she say? So the correct answer is, I mean, not the correct answer, but Minag Yisrael, is that she says nothing. And how do we understand the silence? So we understand the silence as an agreement. It's a tacit agreement to the marriage. If she did not want to get married, she would not have extended her finger and accepted the ring. So we need das, and we need das on both parties. Unlike gittin, by gittin, you only need the das of the husband, not that of the woman, the wife. But in the case of kedushin, you need das nehem. You need the consent of both. She is a makna; she's giving herself over to the husband, so she requires das. Now, but that das is not. Everyone needs das. The only thing is that a ketana, the das is going to be provided by the father, but everybody needs das. So the kedushin is going to be done through das, but that das is not expressed through words. Words of the woman does not say I do. That's a modern American reference. She doesn't say I do. She silently extends her finger out and she accepts it. So that's the shtika. And as the rule is throughout all of Shas, shtika koda. So here too, when a woman accepts the kesef kedushin, the shtika koda, her understanding of the fact that he's propositioning for a marriage and he's giving the kesef kedushin and she accepts it. So all that leads us to the conclusion that in fact is her intent and consent that she is going to get married. With that stated, what we're going to see over the first half of today's daf is that based on a number of contextual clues, we can easily interpret her silence not to be consent, but her silence is rather to be understood as a rejection. So that's what we're going to be dealing with for the first half of today's daf. We're on Yud Beis Amud Beis. We start with the Gemara with Hahu Gavra. Hahu Gavra Dekash Mitziv Sad Asa. So a man goes over to a woman and gives her a mat of hadasim, and is attempting to be mekadosh with a mat of hadasim. So now when he gives her the mat of hadasim, so basically some twigs is what she received as her kesef kedushin. She looks at it and she does not believe that it's worth a shavapruta, like we discussed yesterday. And since really the beginning of the Masechta, in order for a man to be mekadosh a woman, he has to give her a kesef kedushin, the equivalency of a minimum of a shavapruta. So here, it doesn't have the value of a pruta. So she's looking at it and she doesn't understand. What exactly are you being mekadosh with me? She just simply doesn't get it. So Amar Lahu, so he explains to her, open up, look inside. Tiktish bar bezuzay de'izbay. Oh, so after she took it, it's an important detail in this scenario. After she took it, she now realizes that there are four coins in there, and arbezuze, in other words, there were four dinarim, so they were significant value in coins, and shakalta, and she took it, vishtaka, but however, she didn't say anything. So here now is where it gets interesting. When she took the hadasim originally, she didn't understand that it had a shavapruta. So she wasn't looking at it as kesef kedushin. Only after she took it, where then he explained to her, oh, the money's inside, open up and you'll see the money inside. So she opens up and she sees the money's inside, but she doesn't say anything at the time when she actually looks at the money and sees the money. Now, the shtika did not come at the time when he's presenting her the kesef kedushin, because she didn't understand at the time of presentation that this was a kesef kedushin valued at anything greater than a pruta. Only after she took it, she understood, and at that point in time, she didn't say anything. She was quiet. So Amar Rava, havishtikas de lachema and maos v'choshtikas de lachema and maos lav klumu. So Rava says, okay, that silence, and that silence after the matan maos was given, and any silence after matan maos is lav klum. It's simply disregarded. It does not have any halachic significance whatsoever. That is not a recognized shtika, and therefore she's not married. So Amar Rava menamin al detanya. Rava says, and look, how do I know that I'm right? So I know I'm right based on the following braisa. Amar la kinsi selazubi pikadon. Let's say a man goes over to a woman and says, look, here's a selah, right? A nice-sized coin. I want you to take it, and I want you to take it bepikadon. So when he gives it to her, he says, you're going to take it as just simply safe holding. You're going to watch it for me. And now, v'chazv'amar, he's kashalibo. So, and then at a later point in time, he says, you know what? I got a better idea. That coin that I already gave you, I want to be mekash you with that coin. So now, b'shas ma'amos mekudash es. Now, if this was explained at the time when he gave her the money, so then the kedushin is a valid kedushin. Now, if it's after the money's been handed over to her, so ratza mekudash es, so ratzayin mekudash es. So here the Braisa gives us the two key phrases. If she wants, the kedushin is a good kedushin. And if she doesn't want, the kedushin is not going to be a good kedushin. Now, the obvious issue that we have to deal with is, what exactly does that mean she wants, she doesn't want? How is that ratzon expressed? The Gemara goes on to explain. My ratza, my lo ratza. Ilem ratza damra in, lo ratza damra lo. Now, do you think the simple pshat in the Braisa is where the ratza is where she declares yes, and the lo ratza is where she declares no? Now, that's a simple pshat, but it doesn't fit into the rest of the Braisa, because mechlal, dereisha ki amra, lo, nami have a kedushin. Because then, if we were to take the yes and no, and plug it into the ratio of the Braisa, well, then it sounds like, well, the same thing would come out. Meaning that in the ratio of the Braisa, where at the time when he hands it to her, he says to her at that time, I want to be Mekashi with this money, it sounds like, irrespective of whether she says yes or no, the Kedushin is going to be a good Kedushin. That can't be. If at the time when she's receiving the money, and he says to her, hi, this is me, and this is the Kesef Kedushin, and she looks at the Kesef Kedushin, she flat out rejects, and she says no, well, no means no. What else do you think no means? So this idea of ratzasa and lo ratzasa is hinging on whether she says yes or no. That simply doesn't work in the ratio of the braisa. So amayva kamar lo, she's saying no. So elalav, so the Gemara says, so it must be that her ratzon and her lav ratzon are to be understood in the following way. Ela lo ratzasa da amra, I'm sorry, elalav, so I'm sorry. Okay, now the glasses are going on. Elalav ratzasa damra in lo ratzasa di ishtake mishaka. So the Gemara says it must go like this. Ratzasa is where she says yes, and lo ratzasa is where she said nothing. Oh, okay, now you understand. Now you understand the difference between yes versus silence. Yes meaning that it wasn't explained to her at the time where the money was delivered to her, that this is Kesef Kedushin, and that only after she took the money, he then said, oh, by the way, you know what? This is going to be Kesef Kedushin. So once she says yes, that's great. Because now, even though it wasn't understood at the time of the giving, but she's holding the money, she's saying yes to the receiving of the Kesef Kedushin, that's fine. But if she's silent, that's no good. Why? Because it wasn't explained at the time of the giving, it was only explained afterwards. There, her silence after the money's been delivered to her is not interpreted as an acquiescence to the marriage. Gemara says that's the pshat in the Braisa. And it fits in beautifully. It's a beautiful complement to the Reisha. Because in the Reisha, what's happening? At the time of delivery, he says this is Kesef Kedushin. So whether she says yes or whether she's quiet, either way, it's going to work out. Meaning the marriage is going to be a valid marriage. Now we have good pshat in the Braisa. And now once we have good pshat in the Braisa, now we also have a support for Rava. Because Rava says that if something is explained to her afterwards and she's quiet, but as long as it's after the money's already been handed over to her, her silence is not assumed to be acquiescence. Just like we saw in the Braisa.
But it said it was a pikadon.
Okay.
So it's not for her. She's holding it for him.
Okay, when she accepts it, she didn't understand there was Kesef Kedushin. And just because it was explained afterwards doesn't mean anything. That's exactly Rava's point. So wonderful. So Rava has a halacha, and Rava's halacha is supported by the Braisa. And so therefore, where are we at right now? Where we're at is that if she gets the money, and at the time when she actually accepts the money, it was not understood that that was Kesef Kedushin. If she says yes later on, when he explains to her it's Kesef Kedushin, great. If she says nothing, then nothing is not interpreted as acquiescence. Okay. Now, Kashabub from Naramishme de Rav Hunabre de Rav Yoshua. Now, as this was being circulated, this halacha of Rava and the proof from the Braisa, so it got to the desk of Rav Hunabre de Rav Yoshua and Midami. And he says, I don't see the comparison between the Braisa and Rava's conclusion based on the Braisa. Hasan Batoris Pikadun Yavina Niale. So, because in the case of the Braisa, when it was first given to her, she didn't understand this to be marriage at all. In fact, he threw her off the scent because he said it's a pikadon. So there, what is she going to do as a means of rejection? Is she going to take the money and throw it on the floor? The Gemara says she might break it. Now, I understand breaking money is unusual, and some have other girsos in the Gemara that doesn't. It's not a reference to breaking. But the point is that she, when, because it was first explained to her that it was a pikadon, she's not going to reject the money by throwing it on the floor. So there, silence by itself is construed as a rejection. Because she's not going to... Originally, it was thought to be a pikadon. Oh, okay, fine. So I got to take care of it. That was her first mindset as when she received the money. So she'll continue with that mindset, even if later on he says, you know what? Why don't we just call it a day and say, I'll marry you with that money. She can't throw it on the floor because... Now, it's true, she could say no. That's true. But we're just explaining right now why she's not going to throw it on the floor as a means of rejection. But that's why her silence is not going to be understood as a yes. But let's go to our case. Our case is a case where he gives her the mat, the hadassim, and he says at the time, you know what? This is Kesef Kedushin. Now there we had a technical problem. The reeds himself, the mat itself, is not worth the Sheva Pruta. She didn't know that there was money lying inside. She opens it up and surprise, there's money inside. But from the very beginning, it was handed to her as Kesef Kedushin. Oh, so the Gemara says, V'isa de lo nichala lishdinu. So now, if she doesn't want it, you know what rejection for her would mean? She would throw it on the floor. The fact that she didn't throw it on the floor, that must mean that she's accepting. Meaning, we can make a distinction between the cases, between the Braisa, which is dealing with Pikadon, and our case, where originally it was presented to her as Kiddushin. This is Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua's question on how Rava can extrapolate his halacha from the Braisa. So Rav Achai says, look, the women are not holding by Choshe Mishpat. You really think that they're going to make this kind of distinction in their mind about something that was handed to her as a Pikadon versus something that was handed to her as Kesef Kedushin? You're really overthinking this. A woman is thinking to herself, why do I need to throw anything down on the floor? Meaning, whether it was given as a Pikadon, whether it was given as Kesef Kedushin, I'm just simply not going to throw it on the floor. I'm going to throw it on the floor and I'm going to break it and I'm going to have to pay for it. Let's keep it really simple. That's probably what's going on in her mind right now. And if that's what's going on in her mind, that's why she's not throwing on the floor. But she doesn't want to accept as Kesef Kedushin, and just because she's quiet is not acquiescence. So therefore, Rav Achai is basically saying, I think Rav is right. I think his extrapolation from the Braisa is absolutely correct. Okay. Shachar Rav Acha bar Rav Lakami de Ravina ki Agav Namai. So now the Gemara says, okay, now in terms of the halacha, I don't know. Meaning Rava says that if the Kesef Kedushin was given to her, but she didn't understand that the money was really lying inside, and only afterwards did she discover money inside. So now, is the Kedushin good or not? So again, Rava says it's not. Because only at the time when the money is being handed to her, then and only then, is silence considered acquiescence. After that point in time, it's not. That's Rava's halacha. But meanwhile, Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua cast aspersion on his conclusion. So now, question's really simple. Who do we follow? So Shalach Le Anan Lo Shmi Alan Had Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. So he says, look, I never heard from Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. Meaning, I wasn't there. I don't know from his criticism of Rava's halacha. So I'm not going to be worried about it. But Asun Dishmi Lechu Choshula. But you sat in the yeshiva of Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. You knew that he was critical of Rava's psak, and therefore you should be concerned about his criticism, and therefore the chances are, there's a chance that the acquiescence, even though it was after the fact, is considered a consent, and therefore it's marriage. And therefore, now we're not saying it definitely is marriage, but you should be concerned that's marriage, and therefore if she would like to move on, she should get a divorce. Well, it's a question of how to understand her silence. In other words, shtika kahoda. Correct. She's being silent. She's being silent after it's explained to her that this was Kesef Kedushin. So Rava's basic principle is that only works at the time of delivery, not after that. And the Gemara now wants to know, is there any nuance in that halacha? So Rav Huna Breda, Rav Yeshua says yes, and Rav is maintaining no, there's no nuance. After it was given to her, silence is not understood as acquiescence. A woman was selling silk. That's how Rashi over here explains it. A woman was selling silk. So a guy comes over and he's a bit of a bully and he takes the silk from her. Doesn't pay for it, just takes it. And Amar Leh Havani Ali. So she says to the man, okay, that's funny, it's really not. Give it back to me. So, so now the bully becomes even more of a bully. And he says, okay, fine, I'll give it back to you, but only on the condition that I am a kaddish you. The ishtaka. And she's quiet. Now, once again, and now that you see the picture over here and you see the storyline, easily it could be easily understood that her silence is not acquiescence. Her silence is basically, I just want my silk back. That's all I want. And just, I'd like him to leave my life as soon as possible.
But
he gave her the silk. Okay, I think I understand that. So the okay. So the please be patient. We're moving along in the Gemara. The Amar Rav Nachman Yichol LaMeimar in Shakli V'Didi Shakli. So Rav Nachman says it's very simple. Rav Nachman says she could say, yeah, I took it and it's mine. So what I took was mine, and therefore, of course, I'm not married. And I know he made a proposition of marriage, and I know I was quiet. But can everyone look at the context of what's going on? Right? When I went over the case the first time, everyone immediately reacted, oh, of course she's not married. Rav Nachman says that's right, because her silence could be easily interpreted as, I'm just taking back what's rightfully mine. That's all. Eisvei Revel Rav Nachman. Now you'd think that there's no way to argue with such a psak. However, Rava has a problem based on the following brisa. Kitcha begezav v'chamas u'migneva. Oshechatav sela miyada v'kitcha mikudeshes. The brisa lists the following scenarios. Let's say a man steals. Okay, and in terms of steal, it doesn't really matter what kind of theft we're talking about. Gzela, he grabs it right out of the guy's hand right in front of him. Chamas, he grabs it out of his hand and then he pays for it. Okay, that's extortion. Gneva, okay, he takes it from the guy without the guy knowing about it. In other words, he illicitly obtained the item. Oshechatav sela miyada, or he takes it right out of her hand. In any of those scenarios, Vikadasha, and he's Mekadesh with it, Mikudeshes. Now, you and I both know there's a principle of Mitzvah Haba Ba'Aveira, that you can't, the ends does not justify the means, and it's not right that this guy's being Mekadesh a woman with stolen property. Okay, the Gemara doesn't raise this issue. I don't think it's much of an issue. Some Rishonim don't even view the marriage itself as a mitzvah, although the Rambam does. So maybe for the Rambam, You could propose this as a question, but anyway, let's just deal with the halachic aspects of this from the point of using stolen goods. Okay, the Gemara, of course, is not condoning stealing. It's wrong. It's an issur in the Torah. But if we just look at it halachically, when I steal an item, I have certain kinyanim within the item. In other words, there are certain ownership qualities that I have within an item. Obviously, Heshev is Zela, I have to return the item that I stole. And if I don't have the item which I stole, I have to pay back its value. But there's a certain element of ownership that a Goslin has over the item in which he stole. And the point being is that if he gives it to the woman as Kedushin, as Kesef Kedushin, and she accepts the Kedushin as valid, not condoning any of it, but halachically, it simply works. That's the point of the Brisa. And the Brisa punctuates by saying, even if she's the victim of the theft, but if he gives it to her and he says to her, I'm going to make Mikashi with this, and she acquiesces, and she says, yeah, well, let me just say she acquiesces, so then the Kedushin is going to be a valid Kedushin. Okay. And now everyone now understands Rav Nachman's psak is really being challenged, because Rav Nachman says that in the scenario where you had the bully and he took the silk from the woman and she says give it back, and he says only if you accept kiddushin, and she takes it without saying a word, so Rav Nachman says there's nothing to worry about. So Rava says, okay, but after learning this brisa together, really there's nothing to worry about? The brisa seems pretty clear that even though he's being mekadosh with stolen goods, and even if she's the victim of the crime, still the kiddushin is going to be a valid kiddushin. So Rava is saying to Rav Nachman, what are you going to do with this brisa? So Hasam, the Gemara answers very simply. B'dishadach, the brisa over here is talking about a different context altogether. The brisa is talking about where there already were shiduchim. Now, the word shiduchim in the Gemara sense is a little bit different than the way we normally say the word shidduch. The word shiduchim in the Gemara sense is as follows. There was already a contractual agreement between both families that these children are going to get married. Right, that's generally speaking what shiduchim means. Shiduchim just basically means we already spoke about marriage. We already understand that the marriage is going to happen. Now it's the formality of kesef kiddushin. The Braisa was dealing with that scenario. Rav Nachman was dealing with a scenario where the guy just comes right off the street and just takes the silk away from her. There's no context. There was no discussion of marriage. Her silence is not understood as acquiescence. And the Gemara says, and how do I know that such a distinction is in fact a correct distinction? The Tanya, the Gemara says, well, let's take a look together at the following brisa. So he says, take the sela that I owe you. So, and then afterwards he says, you know what? Let's not call this repayment. Let's call this kesef kiddushin. What a better idea. So b'shas man maus ratzai mekadeshes or ratzai nemekadeshes. Now, at the time when he's delivering the money, if she's agreeable, the kiddushin's good. If she's not agreeable, the kiddushin's not good. Lachem man maus. However, after the money was given, afilu ratzai nemekadeshes. Even if it's agreeable, it's not good. Now, my ratzah, my lo ratzah. Here we go again, second time today. What does it mean, agreeable versus not agreeable? Elam ratzah damer, in lo ratzah damer lo. And don't tell me it's a simple question of yes versus no. It can't be. Because ha'ishtika have a kedushin. So, v'nitzne mekudeshes. Stam. So, ki hasam. The Gemara says, because we don't need a yes out of her in order to produce a marriage. Silence at the time where he's giving it to her, and he's explaining to her at the time when he's giving her, this is kesef kiddushin, all you need is silence on her part, and the kiddushin would be good. And yes would be misleading, because if you said that the ratzasa means yes, where she says yes, well then it would indicate that anything less than yes is not going to work, and that's simply not true. So the Gemara says, Ella ratzasa damra in la ratzasa de ishtaka. So it must be the following, that ratzasa is where she says yes, and la ratzasa is where she's quiet. V'katani deina mekudeshes. Now, in the brisa we just learned together, it says that she was quiet and the kiddushin is not going to be a valid kiddushin. Now, why should that be? My time yechola meimer in shikli v'didi shakli. Because it's very simple. Because in the brisa scenario, when she was looking at the money that was giving it to her by that man was owing her money already. That's the context. And he's giving her the money that he owes her. So now, in her mind, you know why she's quiet? It's really simple. Because he owes me the money. And I didn't think anything other than that.
He owes her the silk also.
Wait 1 second. You're right. We're answering up for Rav Nachman. Meaning the silk is a different, is not a different case, but we're answering up for Rav Nachman by just simply first explaining the brisa. So he owes her the money, and he gives her the money, and he's owing it to her. So she's quiet for one very simple reason. This is not marriage. This is not the context of marriage. Now the Gemara says, now, if he's returning something to her, and she's quiet, so in the brisa we just learned together, it's not a kedushin. But meanwhile, two brises ago, when he steals something from her, and he hands it back to her and he says, this is kesef kedushin, she's quiet, so we assume that that silence equals marriage, a consent of marriage. What's the difference between the brisa we just got learning and the previous brisa talking about the thief? So the Gemara says, and the difference is exactly what we just said. Because if they already agreed to a marriage, and after having agreed to marriage, He then does something highly unusual. It's strange. He's stealing money from her and he hands it back to her and he says, this is Kesef Kedushin. She says, yes. I understand all that's strange and it's certainly not the best way to start off the marriage. But because there was Shiduchim, because there was already a previously agreement, an arrangement between the two that we are going to get married, so then even though the Kesef Kedushin is illicitly obtained, even if it's illicitly obtained by taking it from her, but when he says this is Kesef Kedushin, she accepts it, so the marriage is going to be a valid marriage. Masha Inkin, in the brights that we just learned, and in the case of Rav Nachman, Danny, this goes back to your point, and in the case of Rav Nachman, where there was no context, and there was no agreement that we're going to get married, and all she's saying is, give it back to me. And he says, oh, let's call this Kesef Kedushin. And she doesn't say anything. That silence is not acquiescence. That silence is, you're right, you're a bully, just give it back to me. And I don't want to, as long as I get it back, that's all I care about, and I'm certainly not interested in you and I getting married. Okay.
What?
It is, what do you mean? It's worth something.
Well, it's something that he owes her.
Okay, that understood. But if there is shiduchim, if there is an agreement that they're going to get married, the way he obtained it was illegal and illicit, and it's not right. But there, he has certain kinyanim in the item, and that's what he's giving to her. I mean, if they were going for advice and counsel, I'd advise otherwise. But if this is what she wants to be with, then fine. And in other words, again, the Gemara is extraordinarily clinical right now. The Gemara just wants to know, is this Kesef Kedushin going to validate the marriage, yes or no? And then again, that's what the Gemara has been discussing, making the distinction between Shiduchim versus no Shiduchim. Kinat nashed Rav Asi, Aile Rabban Lenakina L'Shmaitate. So Rav Asi dies, and after the death of Rav Asi, so the Chachamim get together and they want to make sure that they have recorded all the various limudim that Rav Asi gave over. So they had almost like a Yurtzeit Shir. They got together and they went over things they heard from Rav Asi. Am Leihom Rabban Rav Yaakov Shmeiach Am Rav Asi Am Rav Mani Kishim Shini Sheniknes Bepachus Mishav Pruta Kachin Kachin Niknes Bepachus Mishav Pruta. Okay, one halacha is that just like a woman, when you acquire a woman, cannot be done with less than a Sheva Pruta. Same thing could be said regarding Karka. There are three ways to acquire a Karka. We're going to learn this also later in the Masechta. And one of the three ways is Kesef. So just like by Kesef, the only qualified way that a man can marry a woman is only with money that is equivalent to at least the value of a Pruta. Same thing, it can be said regarding the purchasing of land. That it has to be that if you're going to use money as the mechanism of acquisition, the vehicle of acquisition, you can only do it if it is valued at a Sheva Pruta. So Amar Leva Atanya Afa Pishe Nisha Niknes Bepachos Mishava Pruta Karka Niknes Bepachos Mishava Pruta. Okay, that's a wonderful teaching of Rav Asi, but I will tell you that the Braisa says otherwise. What are you going to do with the Braisa we just learned? The Braisa says that you can acquire property with something less than a Sheva Pruta. Amar Leki Tanya Ibe Chalipin. So the Gemara says that was talking about buying property using the mechanism of chalipin. The time the Gemara quotes a brayza, konim b'kliv alfa pishem b'shava pruta. You could use a kli even though the kli doesn't have a shava pruta. Chalipin, the item of chalipin, does not need to have the equivalent value of a pruta. We've seen this before, we're seeing it now again. Land could be acquired through chalipin. Remember, we've said this already back in a week ago in the daf, in the Masechta. A woman cannot be acquired through chalipin. A woman specifically can only be acquired through kesef. Shtar and B, of course, as well, but only kesef, not chalipin. So the Gemara says, fine. So if you were talking kesef, so then, women and property are the same in that you need a Sheva Pruta. But the difference, then, what the Braisa was talking about was Chalipin. The Gemara says another statement, which again we also saw a week ago in the Daf, is that if you don't know the detailed halachas of both Gittin and Kedushin, so lo yehe lo esek imahen, you should not be involved. In other words, the halachas are intricate, and the ramifications for not knowing the halachas are going to be very severe. If you are involved in a get and you don't know what you're doing, and the get's not going to be a valid get, She's going to remain a married woman. She'll go on and, quote unquote, marry another man, but that's not a marriage. It's adultery. And the children that are going to be reproduced are mamzerim. So therefore, it is a very risky enterprise to be involved in a get. So you have to know what you're doing. So, and the Gemara says the same thing as regarding Kedushin. There's a discussion off the daf as to whether or not the Masada Kedushin has to really know his business. Some suggest that there is a distinction between Kedushin versus Gittin, and that really the Gemara over here is the real cautionary note of the Gemara over here is only regarding Gittin and not regarding Kedushin. Although that is not the simple pshat in the Gemara, but okay. Anyway, we move on. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan v'kashin la'olam. I'm sorry. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan v'kashin la'olam yoseh midor hamabel. And the Gemara then quotes the name of Rav Asi, and we're going to make one more additional point. If you're involved in a get and you don't know what you're doing, you are more destructive to the world than the generation of the flood. Okay, that's powerful. How does he know that? So the Gemara is going to quote Pesukim. Shenemar Ela, I'm sorry, Ela, v'kichesh, v'ratzuach, v'ganuv, v'na'uf, partzu, v'damim, b'damim, nagu. So the Gemara over here quotes the pasuk from Hosea, and Hosea is giving musar to the Jewish people over violating the following sins. And my mashma, where in this pasuk is it giving us a sense that the person over here is officiating over divorce and he doesn't know what he's doing? The Targum Rav Yosef. So the Gemara says you have to look at the Targum of Rav Yosef. And Rashi over here writes, and we see this a number of times throughout Shas, and that is that Rav Yosef was the official Targum of Nach. When it comes to Psukim from Nevi'im and Tzuvim, this is from Treyasar, so Rav Yosef is the one who gives us the running commentary. Unklus gave us a Targum on the Torah, but after that, the Gemara Megillah, fitting for today, the Gemara in the beginning of Megillah says that Rav Yosef was the one who gave a Targum for Nevi'im and for Tzuvim. Molidim banim min sheikh avrehon choven al choven mosifin. If you have children from your neighbor's husband, meaning adultery, so choven al choven mosifin, it just adds one condemnation to another condemnation. Uksiv, now, so the first thing we establish is the pasuk in Hosea is talking about having children from other men. Okay, now, how do I know that's worse than Dora Mabel? So we got to keep reading on in the pasukim. Al uksiv, al kain te'avel ha'aretz v'umlal. Kol yoshev ba, b'chayis asadev ofer shamayim v'gam dagei ha'yam ya'aseifu. The pasuk in Hosea says that the land is going to mourn over the destruction of all the inhabitants, all the animals, the birds, and the fish. So now, well, you probably know where we're going right now in the Gemara. Now, when it comes to Dora Mabel, although the behavior was obviously condemned and the world was destroyed, but not the entire world, the fish survived the Dora Mabel. However, the women who are producing children from other husbands because they did not receive a proper get from the first husband, so that's going to create the kind of destruction of Dagim. Now, by the way, parenthetically, the Dor HaMabel also, Kishchitz Kol Basar HaAretz, also behaved in such a way, and the basic distinction between the two is that by Dor HaMabel, so you didn't have this concept of Mamzerin, meaning that the children are illegitimate children, but the label of mamzer, that's a label specific to when Jewish women go and have children from other men, other than their husband. So that produces a mamzer, and that's why it's even worse than what Dor HaMabel did. That's the contrast between the two. Okay, so that's a support for Rav Asi, and that's another halacha that was said over by Rav Asi. It's not really a halacha, it's more like a tmusa, it's tochacha. That anyone who's involved in getting really needs to know what they're doing, otherwise you're going to be manufacturing mamzerim, worse than Dora Mabel. Now, the Ema Adav L'Kulu, so the Gemara says, now going back to the Pasuk in Hosea, maybe you only receive the full condemnation given in Hosea only when the person is involved in all the averus mentioned over there. So Lo Sakadacha, the Gemara says, no, Dichsiv, Kimimne Eila, I'm sorry, Kimimne Allah Avla Haaretz. No, the Gemara says if you were involved in in Allah and swearing falsely, you are going to mourn over the land. So you see from this pasuk in Yirmiyahu that just for one of the averas, the land is going to be destroyed. Ve'ema Allah lachud v'hanach lechudayin. So the Gemara says, well, maybe there's something so terrible about swearing falsely that in of itself is going to cause a destruction, but the other things mentioned in Hosea have to be done collectively. Miksiv upartsu, partsu ksiv. So the Gemara says, when you go back to the pasuk in Hosea and you read it very carefully, and it describes the adultery over there, it doesn't say upartsu, it says partsu, without the connecting vav. So you see that adultery by itself creates this kind of destruction. Partsu ksiv. Hadi yasri v'kamre, hadi nan. Okay. Next halacha that was said over by Rav Asi. Again, this is the Yortzai Shir for Rav Asi, and the collection of halachas that were said over to remind ourselves of the teachings of Rav Asi. We have a Mishnah. Isha Sheviya Chatasa Umesa. A woman who brought her chata. She gave birth. This is a Mishnah from Kinim. She gave birth, and she needs to bring a chatas and an olam. So, and she dies. Yavir Yorshin Olasa. So now, the Yorshin bring her carbon ola. They can't bring a carbon chatas, because as we know, when you have a chatas where the owner of the chatas dies, that chatas is left to die. So you cannot bring her chatas post-mortem, but the ola can be brought. Amar Rav Yehuda, and not only could be brought, but needs to be brought. Amar Rav Yehuda Mashmol Vahushi Yifrisha Mechayim. Avaloi Frisha Mechayim Lo. Now, Rav Yehuda Mashmol says, but we're going to limit this Mishnah. The Mishnah is only talking about where she already set it aside prior to her death. But if she did not, so then there is no requirement on the estate to bring an Ola for her. Amakas Avashibud Alav Daraisa. Now, Rav Shmuel is of the opinion that although she has an obligation, her property are not an arev, they don't guarantee her obligations. So therefore, there's no lien on her property against the obligation that she has to bring a carbon. And if she dies, the estate is not obligated to have to bring her carbon ola. Again, not a carbon chatas, because you can't do that. No carbon chatas after the person died, but the ola. Shmuel says, if she wasn't mafrish, then the estate does not have to provide her ola. I'm Rav Asi, I'm Rav Yochanan, Afa Gav Shaloi Frisha Mechayim. And Rav Asi says in the name of Rav Yochanan that he disagrees. That if this woman dies, and unfortunately she did not bring her carbon ola and chatas prior to her death, so again, chatas she's not going to bring, but the estate has to bring her carbon ola. Why? Because since she was alive, she had an obligation to bring a carbon ola. Her estate is a guarantor to that obligation. So even though she's dead, her estate still has to pay for that ola. Amakasava shibud havadaraisa. And the shibud is a shibud minatora, which creates that obligation. Now, so this is about machlokes between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, and the reason why we're learning this right now is because the position of Rav Yochanan is told over by Rav Asi, and remember, we're at the convention of Rabbanim saying over the Torah of Rav Asi. V'ha'pligi b'charizim, and the Gemara says, now, this happens to have already been debated between the Amoraim. Why are we hearing this again? That a milva alpe cannot be collected, not from the Yorshim, not from the Lekuchos. If I make an oral loan, and if I owe money, somebody lent me money, and it was not contracted and was not documented. So according to Rav and Shmuel, so it is not a collectible after I die. Meaning that with the borrower's death, so dies the loan as well. And none of his estate is going to be mortgaged against the loan. Why should that be? Because it's not contracted. So the Gemara says that's the opinion of Rav and Shmuel. Rav Yochanan v'Reish Lakish d'Amar Tavayu Milva Apeh Govim and Yorshin and Govim and Lekuchos. And Rav Yochanan is of the opinion, together with Reish Lakish, that not only is a Milva Apeh collectible from the person, but even after he's dead, it could be collectible from those who inherit his estate, and it's also collectible against Lekuchos as well. Anyone who buys property, it's also collectible from him. So Utsricha. Now, before we get onto the Tzricha. So what do we see very clearly? That according to Rav and Shmuel, there's no Shibud min HaTorah. If it's contracted, that's one story. But if it's not contracted, if it's not a written note, so then there's no Shibud. and the estate doesn't have to pay for it. According to Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, no. Shibud operates on a daraisa level. If I own money, not only do I own money, but all my properties I own also are mortgaged against that obligation. Okay. What we've just seen is this debate now set over twice. Once in the case of an oral loan, and once in the case of the woman who gave birth and died prior to her giving the karban. Tzricha. The Gemara says, even though it's the same basic idea, why is it said over to us in two different halachic scenarios? The Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Deed mar bahak bahak kamar shmol mishum de lo milvak suva betara hiyava bahak ima modele Rabbi Yochanan l'Reish Lakish. Gemara says, look, because in the case of the woman who gave birth, she has to bring a karban the moment she gave birth. Based on what? Based on a pasuk in the Torah. And one can make the following argument. That's an obligation that is contracted, that it's a written contract. Where is it a written contract? In the Torah. So maybe the Torah would substitute as almost as if there was like a written note that I owe this money. So one could have made the argument that maybe Rav and Shmuel, who generally disagree, would agree in the case of the karbanos that the woman owes, since that is kasev b'Torah. And milva kasev b'Torah, it's kikasev b'shtar dami. It's as if it's written in a document. V'yesh min ba'abah kamar av yochanan demilva ksuva b'Torah kiksuva b'shtar dami. Ava b'hachim amodele l'shmuel tzricha. And then conversely, if all I had was a halacha regarding the karbanos, I might have thought that Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish would agree to Rav and Shmuel by a regular oral loan, because in the regular oral loan, there's no, it's not written in the Torah. There's no instruction in the Torah per se. They have to pay back, although of course you have to pay back, but it's not kasev b'Torah, and therefore it's not kikasev b'shtar. And I might have thought Rav Yochanan would say your property is not mortgaged against that obligation. All right, I'm Rav Papa. Now, where do we stand in terms of the halacha? Hilchasa milva peh govem and yorshin ve'eno govem and alkuchos. So Rav Papa says the halacha is a split decision when it comes to a loan, an oral loan, and the person dies, the borrower dies, so the estate has to pay back the loan. Why? Because on that we hold like Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. It's a milva al peh, but still your property is mortgaged against the against that obligation, and therefore the debt doesn't die with the debtor. The debt continues, and the estate has to pay back the debt. Masha Enkin, when it comes to lekuchos, if somebody's buying that property and it's not a contracted loan, so then there's no lien against the property vis-a-vis lekuchos. And the Gemara says, and I know we've seen this time and again throughout Shas. Here's just another occasion we get to see it. Eino govem in lekuchos, govem in yorshin shibuda daraisa. Veino govem in lekuchos, deleis lekala. The Gemara says, because we only have the ability to say buyer beware when it's a contracted document. A contracted document is assumed to have a kol, because every contracted document needs two signers on the document. The two signers on the document, together with the borrower and the lender, presume that there's going to be a certain advertisement, a certain publicity, that's a better word, a certain publicity that comes with this document, and now we could say buyer beware. However, if it's just an oral loan, so then there's no way we can assume that the buyer is supposed to know about oral loans, and the property to be taken away from him is going to be just it'll create chaos. It'll create economic chaos if the properties are going to be taken away over an oral loan. So Gemara says that's a halacha. Huh? How could you prove the debt?
Yeah.
That's a different discussion altogether. Meaning that question is valid. The Gemara over here is not discussing proof. The Gemara is just discussing the basic obligation. And the obligation rolls over to the estate. That's right now all the Gemara is doing. Your question of proof, that's many other Gemara is discussing that topic. Okay, Beged of Amisus Abal. From here until the bottom of the Amma, the Gemara is going to have really just such a, I mean, it's obviously morbid, but it's almost going to be a comical Gemara where the Gemara is going to try to ascertain, how do I know that a woman is allowed to remarry after her husband died? Okay. I know that's a funny question, but if you think about it, however, the question is based on the following basic idea. The Torah says very clearly that when a woman receives a divorce, she's going to move on and marry another man. Where exactly in the Torah does it say that together with the death of one's husband, a woman can now go ahead and remarry? Now again, there's a certain intuitive nature to that halacha, and as we know, we learned day one from the Masechta, she can go ahead and remarry. The Gemara now, for the next half of an Amud, is going to discuss, but how do we know that? Where's the source in the Torah that this is in fact so? Okay, good. It got wheels turning. Let's go. The Torah is very clear that a divorce allows a woman to remarry. So the Gemara starts off by saying it must be a logical argument. And what's the basis of the logic? Who asked Rav? Who sharta? The logical argument is he's the one who created the yisur. He's no longer here. Okay. Oh, right, we're back to ground zero. So the Gemara says, "Va'ah rise to asalu v'lo shar luhu." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but that argument in of itself is not going to be sufficient, because think of the model of arayos. A man's married to a woman. Her mother is going to be forbidden for her forever, and death is not going to change that. Not the death of his mother-in-law. That we're talking about the death of his wife. The death of his wife is not going to change the fact that his mother-in-law forever will be his mother-in-law." So you see that in the world of Arayos, death does not change a status. Okay, so maybe death does not change the status of Eish Ish. Okay. Ella, mida'amar rechmana yivam ha'shein labanim asura, ha'yesh labanim uteris. So the Gemara says, okay, but think about our yivama. Our yivama, we spent the first Masechta and Seder Nashim discussing, where if she has no children, now she's bound to the yavam. But what if she does have children? She's free. She's free to marry whomever she wants. Isn't that sufficient proof? So the Gemara says, "V'dilma in labanim asur la'ama v'shari le'yavam v'yesh labanim l'kuleyama nami asura." So the Gemara says again, it's not absolute proof, which is what we're looking right now for. It's not absolute. One can make the argument: if she has no children, now she can marry her yavam, and if she has children, she can marry nobody. Maybe that's what the Torah's intent is. So the Gemara says, well, the widow can't marry a Kohen Gadol. Which means, of course, that the widow can marry a Kohen Hedjo. And it kind of goes without saying that if she can marry a Kohen Hedjo, she can marry anybody else as well. So the Gemara says, well, maybe no. Maybe the Almana can't marry a Kohen Gadol, and it's an Isser, both Lav and Asay. Maybe, however, the Almana can't marry anybody else, and it's just an Isser Aseh. Now, what exactly the Isser Aseh of the Torah is, well, the Gemara doesn't really articulate. If you take a look at Rashi over here, L'kul Yama Be'aseh, Rashi, a little bit above where we are in the Gemara, Rashi writes, V'yatza v'haysa li shachir, ayyidei gerishin v'lo yayyidei misa. Well, maybe the Aseh is tweaked out, teased out from the fact that the Torah only gives permission for a divorced woman to remarry. So implicit in that is that if she's not divorced, even though she no longer has a husband, there still is an assay, what we would call an iser assay, for her to marry somebody else. Oh, so the Gemara says, well, maybe that's what's preventing her from marrying. So hi assay maya vidate, ida hanya misa sabal tishtar lagarmi, ida lo hanya misa sabal tuk me bimilsa kamaisa. So the Gemara says, wait one second, really? I mean, her husband's going to die, and it's not going to remove all Isurim? So the Gemara says, we can argue that. Alam alo, the Gemara says, well, why not? Afikta mimisavu kimta alasei. So the Gemara says, yes, we can actually argue that. That with the death of her husband, some of the Isurim are going to go away, but the Asay is going to remain. Gemara says, I'll give you a precedent for that. The Gemara says, consider the following. An animal that was a carbon and now got rejected from being a carbon. As a carbon, you cannot misappropriate. If you misappropriate, it's an Isser Me'ila, and you can't shear it, and you cannot work the animal. Parkinu, now, once you redeem the animal, most of the Isurim go away, but not all the Isurim. Me'ila leisbahu. There's no longer an Isur Me'ila, but there's still, for redeemed animals, an Isur of Gizavavod. You cannot shear the animal, you cannot work the animal. So it is not unprecedented in Halacha to have some of the Isurim go away and some of the Isurim remain. So right now, the argument we're going to make is that when a woman loses her husband, some of the Isurim, Eishes Ish, the lav to the Kohen Gadol, I'm sorry, a lav to a Kohen Hedyot, some of the Yisurim are going to go away, and some of the Yisurim will remain. Gemara gives a fascinating source in terms of how we know that a widowed woman is allowed to remarry. Look at what happens when someone goes out to war. There are certain peturim, there are certain exemptions. One of the exemptions in the Torah is if you married a new wife. If you're within the first year of marriage, so you don't go out to war. Why? Because you may die, and she may marry somebody else. Oh, that's a good proof. So the Gemara says, "Maskev Rav Shisha Bar Ravi Diema Man Acher Yavam." Maybe not. Maybe the Acher that the Torah was describing was her Yavam. The Gemara says, "I'm Rav Ashi Beis Shuvas Bedaver." So Rav Ashi says, "No, can't be." First of all, Chada the Yavam Lo Ikre Acher. First of all, the Yavam is not described as an Acher. We don't call a Yavam an outsider. He's an insider. We've gone over this idea multiple times throughout the Gemara. He's considered an insider. So and on top of that, the Torah goes on to describe that when she remarries, second marriage may not work out, although the Torah actually says it a little bit stronger. and the second man is not going to like her, and he's also going to write for her a bill of divorce. I'm sorry. Or he's going to die. So what do we have over here? It's called a hekesh. The itkesh misa legerishim. Magerishin sharya v'gomeris. Of misa sharya v'gomeris. The hekesh also speaks to the idea that just as divorce is an effective way to terminate a marriage, death also is an effective way to terminate a marriage and allow her to remarry.